Good morning. Today is Friday, the 12th of February. Lincoln's birthday. Joining us this morning, a big fan of Abraham Lincoln, Sean Robertson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Are you ready for it?
That's a new book.
That is a new book, but you see, you weren't here last month.
I was not.
Yeah, so this is your first attempt.
All right.
I will tell you, as I've told others, that the success ratio on this is far higher than the other one.
Oh, well, that's
so if you don't get it, you even feel worse.
Okay. My success rate right now, I think, is maybe 1%. So.
Ah, well, let's see if we can double it then, huh?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Ever wonder why onions make you cry?
Yes, I have wondered that.
Okay, you know why.
I don't know why. I'd speculate that it's the fumes. I don't know what the uric acid or something is that triggers your tear response.
So you got there.
All right.
It's not uric acid. I mean, nobody would be eating an onion if it had that in it.
Perhaps.
Or maybe this is a Robertson family tradition that we're unaware of.
That's right. These are special onions.
Kind of like special snow, huh?
That's right.
Yeah. When a fresh onion is sliced, a gas called propane ethyl is released into the air. When this gas reaches the eye, it mixes with the water in the eye to form a weak acid.
So not uric acid.
Just a weak acid, yes. Mm. This acid irritates the eye and causes the tear-producing glands to flood the eye with water in an attempt to wash away the irritant. These tears make it appear that the person slicing the onion is crying.
Yep.
Yes. See, it wasn't that tough.
No, that was great.
I guess we should have got the advanced version, Winston. So you had a little event out on North Bay earlier this week, huh?
We did.
Yeah, what was that all about?
Well, what I know is that site's been vacant for a long time, and there were some contractors there that were working on doing a lot of salvage, because there's a lot of amazing wood in there still, apparently.
Oh, yeah, any of the old stuff. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's real wood.
Yeah, and then apparently 2 days beforehand, those contractors left, so there was no longer any presence there. And then I don't know any more beyond what I read online and
occupants occupied.
Yeah, occupants. Yeah. On the property that shouldn't have been there, smoking or whatever may have caused it. But yeah, it did a lot of damage.
So when you guys respond to a situation like that, let's just call it an industrial site rather than a mill specifically, because we don't have too many of those left anymore.
Right.
How do you approach it differently than you would, let's say, if it was an apartment building, other than the size component? Is there a significant difference?
Yeah, I mean, the immediate difference is the life hazard. Generally, those commercial sites don't have a lot of occupants, especially no residents. But then the logistical issues are access and water supply, and then just getting to the actual seat of the fire, if we can, because most of those are warehouse style buildings, and then they have a lot of separations and additions inside that space. So
yeah, all the partitions, walls.
Yeah, basically. So just getting to where it is challenging. And then when you're inside, you usually have huge spaces. So just the fire behavior and firefighting are going to be different. In this case, we were fortunate that it did have working hydrants on the grounds.
Yeah, don't most mills have?
Yeah, but a lot of them are so old that they're no longer working, and they're certainly not very dependable. I know when we had the Samoa warehouse fire several years ago, we had a significant water supply issue because there were, I think, only one or two hydrants. And that was a much bigger building, so getting access was more challenging.
Yeah, I would think it would be tough if you hooked up and then you saw a fountain about a quarter mile away.
Yeah,
it's not a good sign.
Yeah, and then the longer your hose supply layers, the less water pressure you're going to get because there's just more resistance. So, yeah.
Even I could figure that one out.
Yeah, but this one, I think it was a little smaller. It was really focused on one end.
One building.
Yeah,
specific.
So the problem, so to speak, was relatively simple. But it always seems like that after the fact. The first few minutes are always very challenging, especially when it's twilight at the darkness is coming, you know, and that's
sorry, Chief, I got the sun in my eyes.
Yeah, hard to see where the good access is or which gate is open. There's often nobody there with that type of building.
So something like that, let's say if the gates were locked. Okay, owner's out of market. Maybe or maybe not, there's somebody on it. Will you guys go out with bolt cutters?
Yeah.
And just start wailing away until something opens up?
Yes.
Either that or ramming it, right?
Yeah, we try not to ram things. There's little collateral damage you don't really want to do. We have lots of tools. We can get into about anything eventually.
Yeah.
Eventually, yeah.
In time to see the ashes blow away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably not a good word you want to use on a typical response. We'll take care of it eventually.
Yes.
Yeah.
I meant we have enough tools, we'll cut through anything.
Oh, that's what you meant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get there before it's on the ground, that's for sure.
A large site like that certainly allows for a lot of staging that you guys and gals would be able to do without having to have traffic control. Was that the case in this one? Because we heard all the agencies that were responding. It seemed like it was, you know, there was free food or something. I mean, everybody was there.
Yes. Well, the initial requests were for... I think 6 engines and then 6 water tenders on top of that.
Wow.
Again, you always try to order as many resources as you can because you're
go big and then bring it down.
Exactly. Yeah. You're not always going to get that. There's going to be a delay. We ended up only needing 2 tenders and about, 7 engines. So it worked.
That's still pretty good.
Yep.
Good thing you didn't need the fireboat. Could have been the mud boat.
It would have been the mud boat with legs on to climb over the bridge.
Yeah. Yeah, those darn bridges.
Yeah.
Oh, gee. KINS, news and information time. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Robertson, Humble Bay Fire Chief. Sean, in responding to the fire out at, I guess we could call it still the Sierra Pacific.
Yeah.
The Blue Mill for
Blue
some
Mill,
folks.
Yeah, I've heard that name.
When you go to a historical site like that that has been industrial over the years, I know you send the troops through smaller retail, looking for the sprinklers, looking at getting the lay of the land and all that stuff. Do you do that for the larger sites like that also so that en route you're getting that same type of information that the troops get when they're responding to a more traditional fire?
Some of them. We have target hazards. We sometimes will do industrial tours. It's become less often that we've done that in the last few years as some of those mills stopped operating. I know the New Brainerd Annex property that was California Redwood, we would annually inspect that and go through all the fire pumps and know all the hydrants were. So when they were in operation, yes, that was an annual thing. But now we count more on any stewards or custodians or local knowledge of that. And then we just try to communicate that. And it's more when we organize things and make assignments that's when that information would be communicated.
So the old Arcata Redwood site, a lot of people are using that out now.
Right.
It's still in your territory.
Yes.
Okay. Things have changed significantly since it was, you know, being used in a for the initial reason that it was built.
Yeah.
Is that a concern for you? If that could, one, you got dry wood. Two, you got a lot of dry wood. Mm-hmm. And then you've got other things that in there that weren't in there initially, and as well as all the security gates and that kind of stuff. Is that something that is maybe on the radar screen now that wasn't before?
Yeah, certainly it has a different use, and anytime that changes, we try to become aware of it. I will say that COVID has messed up a lot of our inspection and awareness programs, but we're still maintaining certain elements of that. But yeah, it's a big concern because there are new people in there. There are new uses being made of the facility. There's new access issues. And then just what's been stored in there, we often don't know if it's not.
Yeah, the materials themselves that are inside.
Yeah, we don't know what that is often unless we go and inspect it. And if
I don't think fertilizer is going to explode on you.
Different types of fertilizer.
Non-ammonia-based fertilizer.
There you go.
Yeah. I think it's soil amendment. How's that?
Yeah. Yes. Any organic material generally doesn't blow up in your face. So we like those better.
Yeah. We love redwood mulch.
Yes. So, yeah, anything like that, we want to go and check out. And a big site like that with its own water supply system with pumps and hydrants, we want to make sure they're operating? Because if they're not, we're going to have to bring in our own water supply.
Yeah, it's a whole different type of response at that point.
Exactly. That's going to be a lot more delayed to getting extinguishment.
When you have a situation where you've been asked, the mutual aid response, is that information, or when you are asking for mutual aid, does that information get shared with the folks outside of the district coming in, or do you wait till they get there? And at the command setup, is that where that information gets shared?
The more specific information would be shared on site. We call that face-to-face communication. It's often much more effective, especially in that situation where it's a lot more chaotic. And what we usually communicate en route is location to access, staging location, water supply. Information, things like that, or anything that's safety related, like we have lines down or explosions. That's generally what we communicate en route, because as you can imagine, there's a lot of radio traffic going on.
I would think explosions would be something a high priority to share with somebody.
Yes, we generally don't like to get too close with those. Yeah, one of the most spectacular calls I remember there was the county courtyard on 2nd Street. There were some 55-gallon drums exploding en route to one of those. That was interesting.
Make a detour?
Yeah, we stayed.
Swing by the donut shop on the way.
Stayed a little further away, yeah.
Well, I'm thinking of some of the bullet propane tanks, or the propane tanks that look like bullets, right?
You've
got the small ones. You got the big ones. Won't burn, won't blow, won't, but once it gets to that point.
Yeah.
Now you got something that's really exciting.
Yeah, we call that a blevy, a boiling liquid expanding vapor explosion.
Essentially, can't go with bomb, huh? You have to go with some kind of...
That's the technical hazmat term.
Okay.
Because essentially the gas is compressed to a liquid, and if it's heated beyond where it should be, that vaporization increases to the point where can't be contained in the container anymore, and that's when it blows up.
So it's just trying to escape.
Yeah, and all of those cylinders go through some pretty significant testing.
I would suspect because of the volatility.
So if they're venting and that venting gas is on fire, that's a good thing because we can see it. And then the big concern is the proximity to flames, because that can only compensate for that expansion for a certain amount of time.
At some point, it just gets overwhelmed.
Yeah, and the explosion is catastrophic, as we've seen.
Yeah, that wouldn't want to be too close.
No.
On that one.
No.
It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Robertson from Humboldt Bay Fire. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Baywood Golf and Country Club. Sean, industrial is different than residential, but I know you guys are as concerned about commercial property as you are about the industrial.
Right.
Probably because there's so many of them.
Yes.
And because so many of them are, let's say, 50 years and older.
Right.
They're hitting their mature state of life.
Yes, many of them are.
Yes. That's my new definition for over 50.
Okay.
You're now mature.
All right. I'm getting there.
Yeah. We don't use that elderly term until a little bit longer out.
That's right.
When your folks do the drive arounds and the walkthroughs and you're looking at potential concerns. I know Old Town, just in general, is one of those that makes your guys' hearts go pitter-patter.
Yeah.
Is there any of the newer construction areas that also have got, let's say, stuff that's been built in the last 30 or 40 years? Are there any of those structures that are as concerning, or do they all have sprinklers and they all have designs and you've got the current plans on them and that's really not as... those allow you to sleep at night. It's the others that keep you awake.
Right. We're still concerned with those. Even with sprinklers, those are designed to handle a certain fire load. And then it depends what's stored there. It depends on the activity. The concern with all of those buildings is they're just a bit more complicated. Logistically, there's more things to think about. And it's just going to... depending on where the fire is located, it's going to just be a longer event.
Are the materials easier to anticipate?
Well, yes, but that's a bigger concern, too, because they're often metal, and the metal will fail sooner.
Oh, instead of the good old-fashioned 2x4s?
Right. So that, you know, when you talk about the buildings that are 200 or 100 years old, the concern there is balloon frame construction and a lot more void spaces where the fire can go. But on the other side, they're usually made with full dimensional lumber, so they're actually going to be a bit more resistant. At least
really like a 2x4 is a real 2x4. Yeah,
yeah, they're not going to fall down after, you know, getting a fire exposure for 10 minutes, whereas some of the newer buildings are.
Really?
Well, they're...
Not the warehouse ones that are... you know, thin skin and all that stuff.
It's but more the structural, the I-beams. And
the metal 2x4s
yep.
will release
yeah.
that much sooner.
They just start to distort. It's at above 1,000 degrees for more than 10 minutes is what we're taught. It just starts to twist.
Yeah, it warps.
Yep. And if it's all tied together with, you know, beams and cords, it's not a good place to be.
Well, it's kind of the concept, isn't it? And they design it, it's one unit, so it withstands the earthquakes?
Yeah, and it's also a lot more efficient to build. But that's the bigger concern that we have. And often that means we're going to have a much more safety-conscious approach, you know, being outside, but a more defensive fire. And then it's difficult to make good access. So those are all the logistical challenges for sure.
Metal roofs. A lot of folks are going with the it's not corrugated, but you know what I'm talking
yeah.
about. Are those better than the comp shingles? Is it easier? Is it more challenging for you guys when you try to punch the hole in to vent it out? Are those things special challenges?
Yes. If it's a residential house, we'll still do the vertical ventilation to cut a hole in it. It's going to be a lot more of a trip-slip hazard. Just because
you slide on those easier,
yeah,
is that,
yeah,
okay,
yeah, and especially here in the wintertime, it's. I mean, I've been on lots of wood shingle roofs that were like ice skating rinks, so that's one issue, but generally they're pretty easy to cut through, and then you're still having traditional wood products beneath that. On the commercials, though, it's generally a sheathing or it's a laminate roofing material, and then it's got metal structures underneath that, so we don't ventilate those because it's a very hazardous place to be. And a lot of those are built...
Because of the metal underneath, it could start doing the warp. And
exactly.
You're checking out the basement.
Yeah. And what happens sometimes there is in the laminated layer, the fire will get trapped. So it's
it'll run between the layers?
Yep. It'll just get
Does that happen also with plywood?
Not as much because it'll consume the whole layer.
Just because it's not that thick.
Yeah, but with the lamination, the sandwiching sometimes is the two outer layers are non-combustible, but the middle one is, and it'll find an access space, and it'll run through that.
The whole thing. So you may be looking at a hollowed out log, thinking that it's really a 4x12 beam.
Yeah.
And there's nobody home.
Yeah. Yeah, this is more with the roof material itself, not with the structure.
The 4x8 or 4x12 sheets that they put down.
Yeah.
So when you build your home, I'm hearing no metal 2x4s. I'm hearing no metal roof. Let's talk glass. Do you have windows in your house?
Yes. Like I said, on a house, it's less of a problem because everything's
scaled. But you're bringing all this knowledge. I mean, you're building this thing. I mean,
and then if you sprinkle the house too, you have good working smoke alarms. You take good maintenance. You know, everything like that should be fine. It's always the human factor that is difficult to predict.
You mean forgetting to empty the eaves or the gutters?
Yep, things like that.
Yeah.
Or not cleaning your chimney.
Okay. Yeah. And that's twice a year?
Yep, exactly.
See, we know these things. Do we do these things? That's the question.
Most people do not.
Okay, well, it keeps you guys going.
And we have some great chimney sweeps around here still working. I worked with one of them, Carl, 20 years ago. That's always fun to see him driving around.
Oh, you pull him over?
No, I've never done that in my fire car.
Yet. Like you said, you're not even at 50 yet.
That's right.
Yet.
There you go.
KINS, news and information time. It's 42 past, 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Robertson from Humboldt Bay Fire. 3-day weekend.
Yeah.
Fireworks will be all over the place this weekend.
I hope not.
I know.
It'll be wet. It'll damp in there.
Yeah, I suspect that that's probably a good thing. Do you guys look at weather forecasts and anticipate things?
Yes.
Associated with that? Obviously, fire is going to be a little less likely unless somebody decides to do the old barbecue in the garage trick. That's a different dynamic.
Yeah.
But like this time of the year, what are you most concerned about? Flooding as much as anything?
Flooding's a big one. If we are getting snow on the higher elevations, like up Greenwood Height or Neyland Road, we consider that because we often go and do mutual aid up there. So we look at taking our wildland engine, which has four-wheel drive capability.
Like park it down at the elementary school kind of thing?
Well, it's
or
at...
Or is it a hover?
It's at Station 5, across from Redwood Acres. So it's more just the crew being aware of that. I remember in years past, we would go and distribute tire chains for all the fire engines.
Well, that's got to be quite fun.
It's not fun. And
whoa.
Yeah, things would have to be pretty crazy for there to be a need to chain up in the city. Because just the weight of the vehicles and how.
Yeah, you could run with 2 or 3 inches on the ground, couldn't you?
Yeah. I mean,
how do you train for that, though? As we all know, driving in snow is a little bit different than
it is
what we're accustomed to.
Yeah, we don't really train for that beyond just an awareness of, you know, this is what to think about. but there's no
Do the trucks handle differently? I mean, they're so heavy when they're loaded. Do they react kind of like your personal rig
on snow? My only experience driving in snow has been on top of Neyland. And it's kind of like driving in some heavy mud sometimes, is just the traction is different. And because the vehicles are heavier, when you turn, the surface will not hold. It'll drift a bit. So you just have to be much more mindful.
No hairpins.
Yeah.
You're just kind of going a little slower and swinging it out.
Yeah, you just have to be more mindful of going real slow, especially with the turns and expecting that change.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. You know, driving slow, looking out for explosions.
Yep.
Yeah, you too could be a fireman.
That's right. Living a life of adventure.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. Well, hopefully this won't be an adventurous weekend and you'll be able to spend a little bit of time not thinking about the job.
All right, thank you.
All righty, bud. Thanks for coming by. See everybody tomorrow.